Welcome back. This is the five biggest mistakes that directors make in training staff. First, let me tell you why this is important. The biggest problems that directors tell me they have, and of course I know it's true, is time pressure and crazy staff. And I talked in the first of this series of three, the first one, that you can use the best ideas from time management. Franklin Covey has the big rock idea, and Julie Morgenstern has the do it now idea, but neither one of them really addresses the root problem, and that is that your staff impinge upon your time. So how can you get more done with less time input from yourself? And that is to address the crazy staff problem. And if that's not abundantly clear to you, then maybe you haven't heard the first one and you haven't done the exercise. So this is the third one, but you could go back to the first. And if your staff would only do what they're supposed to do, that would be great. Well, how are you going to get staff to do what they're supposed to do except by good training? And of course, evaluation and reward enters into that. And I have a whole training seminar called Godzilla or Gecko, and that's a very popular one that I do at conferences, and so maybe you can get in on that, or if there's call for that, I can post that one too. And occasionally you have someone who just won't take direction. You want to not hire those people. In Godzilla to Gecko, we talk about how to fire and how not to fire, but and how to avoid firing. But you want to hire good employees. So that was the second one, is my three top secrets on hiring good employees. And I have had great results. I have had outstanding results because I've been in some tight spots that I would never have been able to achieve. I was hired to be a change agent and couldn't have done that if I hadn't hired the right people. But even if you have the best people, you've got to get them all pointed in the same direction, in a right direction, the direction that you want to go. And so that's all about training, conveying to them, communicating to them what you want to do. And so this really does address the two biggest problems: time pressure. How do you squeeze back on the time pressure? I know, in fact, I was in a training where wonderful, experienced directors said, well, just take around a yellow pad with you so you can remember all the things that your employees are telling you to do. Well, that is a practical suggestion, but wouldn't it be better if the employees were doing what they were supposed to be doing and you weren't being piled on every morning as you walked down the hall so many things that you couldn't even remember? Okay, so, but how in the world do you get people to do what you want them to do? Well, we're going to tell you. Good training. Let me tell you a little bit about myself. Yes, I am a trainer and consultant, and I have been training since the 80s. I have been consulting since the late 90s, and I understand your pain because I have been there. I have worked in early childhood. I've been a director. I have been a change agent. I am almost always hired to come in to impossible situations and change them. And I enjoy that kind of pulling off of miracles. But I can only pull off so many miracles given my time without just giving away my information. That's what I want to do as a trainer, is help you pull off miracles. Because I know the pain you're under. I know that you're working 14 hours a day. I know that you are burning yourself out. I know the pain, the grief, the pressure that you're under in terms of time. And I know how stressful it is dealing with your employees. But I can transform that for you. I want to transform your directorship from a pain to a pleasure. I want to transform that to from crazy, ridiculous to kingdom, millennium, golden age, right? Because you have everybody going around being loving and working hard. And you think that's crazy, but it isn't. We have language for that because we can think that, and we can think that because someone has seen that. These ideas can transform you, your life, your center, and early childhood eventually. Okay, I want you to be able to imagine what would happen if your employees did what you wanted them to do. How much your time problems would be reduced, how much your grief would be reduced, and how inspiring that would be if y'all could all get together as a team and work together for the good of those children. And it's not just, it is rainbows and flowers, but rainbows and flowers are real. And so I want you to see that I can convey that to you. I can convey the ideas to you, and you can apply them, and I can help you do that. Some people say, well, I don't have time to invest in training. Well, you don't have time not to. Some people say, I don't have money to invest in training. And of course, you really do. You're making money. But you can't afford not to. Do you believe in education? Well, of course you do, or you wouldn't be doing what you're doing. Not only have I been a change agent in my own centers, where I was hired to be the savior director. Of course, I'm not the savior, but, you know, I do pull off miracles. But I have done some good things as a consultant, too. I remember a corporate director telling me she was run off her feet, and we worked through what was going on, situation by situation, and it was evident that she was trying to do too much. And she was really worried about corporate coming down on her, but she had more than 200 children, and she was the only non-teaching staff. And so she said, I can't answer the phone and direct the teachers. And I said, well, no, and it's not good budget to have you answering the phone. You could hire somebody for minimum wage to answer the phone. You could hire somebody for a little bit more than minimum wage to answer the phone and capture your stats, so you could do the job of managing. And then you'd have a better center and all your stats would go up. And you ought to tell corporate that. And if you don't, then you haven't done your job as a professional. Well, I didn't speak that harshly to her. But she did that, and the center was revolutionized. Her life was better, and the center was better, and all the stats that the corporation wanted was up, because they understood when presented with the situation that that was a better investment, you know, a minimum wage or a little over that worker who can answer phones. So the director can be good. I believe I told you about the downtown church-affiliated center, and she was harried. And we put in a simple procedure of some office hours, and I made all the difference to her. I had another director who wrote down all the things that she needed to do in the time frame and submitted that to her board. And they realized that they didn't have a preschool director who had a happy little half-time job. In fact, an exactly the same center, the same kind of center down the road, thought that their job was a full-time job. And it was exactly the same job. Oh, but they're full-time, and she couldn't possibly do anything else. And the other one, they thought, was a happy time. It was the same hours and the same duties. And so, well, corporate might have some idea. You know, a volunteer board may not have an idea. And so I've helped with that kind of communication. And I told you, you know, about my center on the point of closing down. And of course, I did take the lead in training them myself. I already had plenty of expertise and experience training. And I can't tell you the number of times when I have seen training really change a situation. Let me tell you about Morgan Printing. Now, Michael Morgan owned Morgan Printing, and you may know their business now, and it's changed ownership, but Michael Morgan was an innovative thinker, and he often hired trainers, and he hired consultants, and he wanted to improve many things, the culture. He wanted a warm culture in his, an innovative culture in his business, but he also wanted to improve bottom line. And in the printing business, if employees don't communicate well, and employees to customers don't communicate well, then there's a much higher waste rate. And the waste rate cuts directly into profit. So if you can improve communication and reduce waste, you have dramatically improved profit. And he was frustrated with some business consultants that he had had in. He had, because he was a relatively small business, you know, this is not one of the largest businesses in the world, but it was a local proprietary business. He had some junior members of some important consulting firms, and he was unhappy with them because they basically told him what was in the account, in the management textbooks, which he had read. He said he almost literally threw one of them out. And he had some of the very best trainers in terms of communication. I mean, they're great. They're great trainers and in communication, but they didn't change his waste rate. And so Michael was a good friend of mine, and he was helping me, and I was helping him. And I went in to his business, and I did some pre-training work. I went around and talked to all the employees. And we then planned the training. Michael and I planned the training after I got a more fulsome view of what the employees thought. And then they did some post follow-up work, which was really more facilitation work, because the employees then knew what Michael wanted, and we knew what the employees wanted. And so then I did some meeting facilitation, and we got what everybody wanted. Michael was deliriously happy, and all of the employees were happy. So this is the ideal situation, that the overall business objectives are met. And this is the ideal way to get it, is in a context of pre-work training that is really pointed to fixing the problem, and then some follow-up work that brings in application and accountability. And you can really get down the road that way. And all professional trainers know this. Well, I say all professional trainers. The world-class trainers who are part of National Speakers Association and who train for, you know, that's their career, who train for the top corporations. They know this. Corporations want real, actionable measures, and they want real, verified results. Well, why shouldn't you have that in your center? But just like the best trainers all know this, also we know that employers tend to want just the fewest hours and the fewest dollars. Okay? But will that get them what they want? In early childhood, the vision that most people have is fulfill licensing requirements and get it as cheaply as possible. I just heard on television a man who was doing financial training and consulting saying, you know, women understand money. My wife just switched her hand lotion because she could get it for a dollar cheaper and an ounce more. She understands about money. Well, okay, there is a certain wisdom in that. But then does that hand cream actually do the job? Or does it have an ingredient in it that makes your hands dry so you buy more? In fact, that's true about many hand creams and hand lotions. So, well, there is a certain amount of wisdom in price comparisons. You have to compare best value. And best value in training may not be what is funniest.
And certainly isn't
just merely what is cheapest. Let's talk about dish soap. What's best value to you as a director is what makes my center better? What helps my employees do what they need to do, make the children better educated and happier, and my parents better educated and happier, and my bottom line improve? So you want training that helps your staff do the right thing, that reduces your grief, increases your profit, right? And brings the kingdom and rainbows and flowers. So, I promise to you, the five biggest mistakes that people make in training. Do you see that you could save yourself time and grief by getting your staff to do what you wanted them to do? And training is a major way of doing that. So we've talked about saving yourself time and grief in your own organization and in getting the right staff. But now, how do you save time and grief by avoiding the five biggest mistakes? Well, the overall picture, the biggest mistake is that the training was never designed to change something. That was never built in. There was never any relevance or application. Maybe there were some creative ideas, but did it do any good at changing how the teachers perform and how the center performs? Let's just take lesson plans, for instance. I remember coming on as a of course, I came on as an assistant teacher, but once I got to be a lead teacher, I remember posting my lesson plans, and nobody else did that. I guess they were making lesson plans, but they weren't posted. I remember, much more recently, going into a center, and I saw lesson plans all posted very nicely, but they were all from 6 months ago, right? Because something else was going on in the center that was picking the attention. And I remember being a director and having a staff person hand me her lesson plans, going, "Well, I'm late again this week. That's okay, isn't it?" No. I have to publish this in an electronic newsletter. If you give it to me late, no, that's not okay. Clearly, I had a training problem. Okay, so here are the five biggest mistakes. If the biggest overall one is, it doesn't make a change. Okay, this is transformational. First, pointless training. Now, if you send your staff out to get their own training, they may pick something that will greatly improve their practice as an educator. Or they may go to what happens to be first, cheapest, easiest, or something that they really like. So if you have, say you have a teacher who's just so artistic, but she's not really very good in early literacy, and so she chooses her art classes. Now, licensing does have some direction in this, but I can't tell you the amount of training that simply isn't aimed to a change. It's pointless. It's irrelevant to the current need of the employee, but most importantly, of the center. Or possibly it's not at the right level. We're trying to address that in our proposals these days. Registry requires you to say, is this beginner, intermediate, or advanced training? And so one should check, because training that is right topic but can't be understood by the employee or is way too easy is still pointless. But most of all, it needs to be irrelevant. Overall relevant. So that's the first biggest mistake. It's pointless. It might be the easiest. It might be the cheapest. But is it aimed at anything? Number two, it's wrong training. Wrong training. Now, this is something that no one would ever breathe. You know, we just don't talk about this. But there are several kinds of wrong. Wrong philosophically for the school, for instance. So if you have a Montessori center, You do not need training in how to do worksheets. But I have seen Montessori centers putting away the didactic apparatus and using worksheets. Well, then that's false advertisement. I mean, if they've changed their philosophy, fine. But if they're a Montessori center, they need to have Montessori equipment, and they need teachers to know how to use Montessori equipment and not worksheets. I mean, I've actually seen this. I'm not just coming up with a foolish story. I've seen it. You need training that is in line with the philosophy of your school, and there are greatly differing philosophies, from Montessori to play to very structured kind of 2D, well, we'll say worksheets. Lots of different philosophies, and training needs to be in line with the philosophy of the center. Now, it's not that to say that you could never find an idea from somebody else's philosophy. Of course you could, but you need to know that that's what you're doing. So if you're in a, you know, the standard center, and you want to take, you know, ideas from Montessori that you can use in your classroom, well, great and fine. That's one I offer. I think that's very useful, because I think ideas can be swapped, but that the philosophy needs to be explicit and needs to be in line with what your center is trying to do. Also, wrong training may be that it is aimed at the wrong demographic. Okay, so it just doesn't fit with the kind of people that your center serves. So I have sat in trainings where the trainers are saying, now you need to tell your parents. You need to enforce upon your parents, da-da-da. Okay, and maybe that flies somewhere. You know, maybe if you're in an area where your teachers are more educated than the parents coming in, that makes some sense. But if you're serving in a more affluent area, you know, like Westlake or Tarrytown, these are parts of Austin where you have highly educated parents, highly moneyed parents, they are already highly invested in education. They probably have a great deal more education than the teachers, even though the teachers probably have more education than the average teacher. But in those instances, the teachers do not take the tone of teaching the parents or enforcing upon the parents, telling the parents anything. They might share with the parents. They might try to, or they might suggest that they consider. But it's very clear in those cases who's working for who. And hopefully the parents value the expertise that the parents bring. I think they do. The parents value the expertise that the teachers bring as educators. But there's no enforcing upon the parents. That's not going to happen. I'm not sure if that's really ethical in any case, because don't we serve the family? The families don't serve us. We serve the families, right? I mean, I think business is very clear about that. And churches are very clear about that. Sometimes training is not. So that's my example of wrong demographically. So it could be wrong philosophically, but it could be wrong demographically. It could be wrong in terms of science. You know, we are having a push for evidence-based training. And although I think there may be some bias built into that, reasons why it came about, by and large, I welcome that. I mean, does it really work? Is that really true? Or is that some bias or prejudice? And I think that we have seen now wave after wave after wave of fashion, of ideas, fashions in education, philosophies in education. We've had now more than 100 years of those. And I think it is high time that we get some measurements on the results. What really works? And just because a professor says it doesn't mean that it's really scientific. what is really, just because a doctor says it doesn't mean that it's scientific. What's scientific is what has support through experimental means, systematic observation. So in the final analysis, what is science is what has been observed systematically or experimentally and published in a peer-reviewed journal. And sometimes you get trainers who are training something that is wrong. Now, a lot of times, experienced teachers notice this and ignore it. But your younger teachers will be led astray if they're getting training that is wrong. And it happens. It happens on the mouth of people who you think would be respectable authority. Because we have had 100 years more of fashion. It's trained in the academies and so forth and so on. And so when I teach in higher education, I really work to be sure that my students know what real science is, because they're going to hear a variety of viewpoints, and hopefully everything they hear in my class is going to be based on some evidence. But as citizens, and in fact, there may be evidence on both sides. So to come to a wise decision on how to proceed, they're going to need to be able to sort that out and drill down. And the first thing before what should be is what is. Drill down to find out what is. What is scientifically known? And then you can build a what should be. Okay? So, pointless training, wrong philosophically, wrong in terms of demography, wrong in terms of facts. Okay? 3. Flyover training. This is low content. Let's quickly go over the exam or too many rabbit trails. This is just low content training. And I see this whenever I go out to the sponsored training. I know you know what I'm talking about because you've been there too. I don't know how much I should say about this, you know, because my competitors regulate me. But you know what I mean when I'm talking about low content training. And I'm afraid that it is spreading in lots of places, low content education, as there is pressure to increase statistical results for retention and grades. And as there is a push, and there will be a continued push for low-cost education and training is becoming lower content and easier. I've always told my students, I mean, the more easy it is, the more boring it is, and the harder it is, the more interesting it is. And that's certainly true if you're really getting into controversial issues, which I can't avoid, hallelujah, in my class. But if people are going to training simply to fulfill a requirement, then they're going to look for cheapest and easiest. And so this becomes an environment in from both the consumer side as well as the provider side to provide low-content flyover training. This does not help your center. It does not make better teachers. It does not make your center easier to run. Does not increase your profit. It does not reduce your grief pain. In fact, it may make more things for you to do because now your employees have been mistrained. Okay, so pointless, wrong, low content flyover, or 5, garbled. So the training was not clear. And it may be that many of these fashions have developed from good marketing and garbled training, because I want to accord good intentions to many of the promulgators. But for instance, we all know that we've all been trained that we should redirect children. And that's true, you know. Rather than always having a contest of wills, you want to redirect children. You want to help them choose to do the right thing. And I think that is a better way of saying it. Help them choose to do the right thing. But redirection has been the watchword now for decades. And I have seen in several instances that teachers have taken this to mean tricking the children. Tricking the children. In fact, I had an enormously bright applicant, enormously bright, enormously well-trained from a nationally recognized school come in, and in my interview, using my open-ended questions, I discovered that she was a very good tricker, and she was proud that she was such a good tricker of children. And I decided, I mean, she basically told me that. I decided, I was so glad I had used open-ended questions. I decided I really did not want on my staff an enormously bright person who was really good at tricking people. I assumed that the college that she went to was trying to teach her to redirect, and she misunderstood and learned to trick. And of course, I see mothers do that too. And of course, you are going to be more intelligent or apt or able than your preschool children if you're an adult, but is that what you want to teach your children? By example. I don't think redirection means tricking. And I think it doesn't help those children, your students, to make better choices. Again, here's another example. We have worked for some decades now to stop abuse. We never want to see in a center children being beaten. Of course not. And back in the 70s, I heard of one or two cases, you know, actually in a center where a child was beaten. I guess I heard of one case. But anyway, since then I have heard of citations, somebody restraining a child, like holding them. The child was going out, you know, bounds and going nuts in the toddler classroom, and the teacher just held the child, and of course she was fired for that. I've heard teacher just so happened when licensing came and the teacher spoke harshly to a child. She was frustrated and old and tired, and she was, of course, fired for that. We want to stop abuse. This has then been operationalized to mean you never spank a child, you never speak sharply to a child, and so forth. But I think it has been further garbled to mean we stop giving limits. Stop giving limits to children. And I think this is more true in the more educated segments of society. For instance, my door in a center in a very affluent area, the door to my office as a director was, of course, right by the door outside. So families would come in and go out right past my door. And inside my door was a little table and a small play area in case a mother or parents were visiting with me, then the child could be involved playing. And so very often, as a mother had picked up her preschool child and had with her her toddler child, they would walk past my office, and the younger of the two children would come in my office and start playing. And the parent wanted to say, put that down and come on, we're going to the car and we're going to have lunch or whatever. But the mother so often, I think every time, would look at me and realize she couldn't do that. And so she was whining and wheedling and spending 20, 30 minutes trying to convince a toddler to come on because the family is waiting and we need to get in the car and go to lunch or whatever. And I think that there are some classrooms, of course not in my centers, but there are some classrooms where children are not given limits. And I think this is really garbled. We want to stop abuse, for sure. But if we stop giving limits, if we stop training children in a way that allows them to self-limit as they grow up, so older children and adults, then we're into neglect. I mean, this is abusive in itself. If a child doesn't learn that there are limits in preschool, then what's going to happen in school? And if they don't learn in school, I'm going to tell you what, they're going to find out that there are limits when they're teenagers, and it will probably be the police that inform them. Better that they learn that there are limits when they're two and learn over time how to limit themselves, how to enforce upon themselves to make better choices. Otherwise, there is an enforcement in our society, and it's the police. And a child who hasn't learned limits by the time they're 18 usually learns it in prison. Right? I am just trying to demonstrate to you the seriousness of this situation. But we have been trained over and over and over and over and over again. And of course we agree with no abuse. But if that then gets garbled to no limits, that we can't say no to a child, then we have gone seriously over into the neglect, which is another kind of abuse. This is garbled training. And of course, there are many other instances I could give you, most of them much less serious, like training on ideas to do on the playground. It gets translated into everything must be programmed and there must be no playtime. Or training on expressive artwork gets garbled into you must never do crafts. Or training on cleanliness ends up you must never allow the children to explore textures or vice versa. Okay. Anyway, you could probably come up with your own examples. Pointless training, wrong training, low content training, garbled training, fluff or distracting training. Now you can have training that has some real content, but if there's so much fluff or funniness or sexually explicit material that it detracts from the content, then although the trainer might get high marks, although the trainer might make sales, it's not going to change your center. And many professional trainers discover that this sort of training gets them engagements. They are very funny. They have a lot of games, a lot of songs, or a lot of blue jokes. And they think that's great, and that may be great for their business, but it's not good for yours. This is not going to improve the performance of your staff. Now, if you have a little of that and it makes the medicine go down fine, a little sugar to make the medicine go down to quote Mary Poppins, fine. But it's a matter of degrees. If it's distracting, it detracts from the message. You want training that's going to improve performance, make the culture that your center wants, that reduces your pain and improves your profit. So we got pointless, wrong, low content, garbled, fluff, distracting. And how about a bad attitude about training? Now I've heard about this because I haven't directly seen, but I have heard that some training is just touching, you know, the bases, and it really conveys a bad attitude about education, about training, about the profession, about taking direction, about directors, about philosophy. I've heard anti-Christian comments. I hear that even in the university. Usually people know better than to say something bad about a minority or a minority religion, but somehow it's open season on Christians. Any kind of bad attitude that gets in your training, any kind of disrespect, is going to spread like mold to disrespect for you and your center. That makes it bad training, even if something else about it is good. Or bad attitudes about collaborating with parents or serving the parents, right? Is this not the direction you want. That's bad training. And of course, so we've got pointless wrong, low content flyover, garbled fluff and distracting bad attitudes. And then you have training that is good, but it's not memorable. There's not an application. The students are not engaged. So it still doesn't create the kind of change that you want. Does it really solve a problem? Does it really solve the problem that you need solved? Those are the five big mistakes. They all feed into the one big mistake. Does it solve a problem? Does it change your center? So, what do you do? I promised you the five big mistakes, and inherent in knowing what they are, you can solve them. But let me give you some ideas about what to do, how to make training work, what to check on. First off, of course, you need to know what it is you want. And sometimes managers don't really know what the problem is. I stood up in a professional association. Somebody from Dell. Was it Michael Dell? I think so. And I said, I'm a trainer consultant and I help people find out what's really going on and fix it. And he said, I can't tell you for sure it's Michael Dell, but somebody big said, wow, that's great. Really finding out what's going on is the big issue. But assuming you know what's going on and you know what you want to change, then pick some training that's going to do that. Decide what it is you want in terms of change and improvement. Maybe it's not change. Maybe it's just improvement. Do believe in the rainbow and flower. We're supposed to believe in the kingdom and bring in the kingdom. That's what faith is all about, so that we can achieve. So decide what it is you want. Dare to dream. If you don't dare to dream, you know, if you think you can't, you're right. If you think you can, you're right. So decide what it is you want. And then translate that into learning outcomes. And then communicate with your trainer. And so many times, now sometimes you may be able to train, and maybe if you do some training with your staff, you can apply all of this, but some topics, particularly if you want to change your center, you're going to have somebody who's from outside, because everybody is stuck in the system. And if they're not listening to you, they're not listening to you. And it needs to be, sometimes it's just the respect of to an outsider. Sometimes it's a new way of seeing things. But sometimes, a lot of times, somebody from the outside can make the bigger change. But so often, people do not fully communicate with the trainer. And this goes back to the canned, you know, buying a particular seminar. Well, and that's reasonable, because that takes less time for the trainer and therefore less cost for you. But it's a best value situation. If you want a real change, then you need to pay that trainer to come in and do consulting and do pre-work and post-work and maybe do some tailor-making or some custom-making or from-scratch training for you. And, of course, that's going to cost more, you know. Trainers have to make a living just like everyone else. So if you want that, of course, that is more than just canned training. But again, is this worthwhile? You know, is it best value? So any training needs to have some learning objectives. And they need clear indication of experience level. You need to check the experience of the trainer and communicate about what you think the right level of fun and content is, and the level that your employees are on. Check the basic philosophy and stop assuming. Stop assuming that there is one vanilla and that one size fits all, because it surely does not. And I really see this as a problem in the Christian church-affiliated schools. Now, you know, a synagogue-affiliated and a mainline church-affiliated school, they may not be that different. But one church to another church may be extraordinarily different. And all of them may be extraordinarily different from, say, the Head Starts, even in their same region. And one state and another state might be different. And one part of town and another part of town might be different. Never mind the obvious philosophical differences. You know, the Montessorians know how they're different. But even within some of the other, you know, they don't make their philosophies explicit, and everyone just assumes that they're all the same. And this assumption is just not good. So check the philosophy. And if you have a philosophy, communicate that to your trainer and see if she or he goes along with that and can work with you. Check the educational engagement. Now, it's the fashion to say, highly interactive, highly interactive. Well, yeah. But if you have so much interaction that you have no content, that really doesn't teach anything. And it just happens to be the fashion. So the people who learn best, we want a brain dump. We want a lecture. So the fashion, once again, is undermining the real result. What you want to do is match what you want to do. How much games, how much exercise, and be sure that they actually connect with the topic at hand. And so you need to spend some time communicating with your trainer. If you can do pre and post, man, oh man, you are so much farther down the road. Find out, and you yourself check to see if this is making a difference in the classroom. And you know the Hawthorne effect. People will perform better if they know they're being checked on. So tell your teachers, I'm going to check. You know, if you have done, for instance, a training on curriculum planning, say, I'm going to check this. I want these turned in, and I'm blah, blah, blah. If you did a training on conflict reduction, revisit that topic the next month's staff meeting, the next month's staff meeting. If you want a change in your culture, it's going to take some time. And a one-off training isn't going to do nearly as much as if you have a series and have accountability, if it's aimed correctly and done well, and then follow up, you're going to get much farther down the road. And of course, you can ask your staff and your colleagues about their experience with the trainer. You know, when I came in to one center, and I knew I had good educators, I was very interested in their responses when a local professional association had their regional training. My staff didn't want to go. I was shocked because I thought this was creme de la creme, but no. And then when a particular private trainer came to town, they wanted to go to that. And then when the denomination's training went, well, they all went, because it was required, but it was kind of grim, you know? Well, now I look back and I see that was a very good indication of the quality, the comparative quality. These were college-educated, motivated, great teachers, and they would do what was required, even if it was grim, but they just wouldn't go to some of the less professional stuff. So it wasn't the name on it that was impressive to them. They knew the real difference, and that it was an education to me. And of course, you want to check what attitude they come back with, and also look for at least some direction for further study in the training materials. I know bibliographies are not usually read, but I sure like to give them. So I at least put some further study in. If people will at least tell you some of their sources, and of course, the professional thing to do is to be doing their own training. But for instance, when I was talking about time management, and I said, well, here's one idea and here's another one, I specifically told you where they came from. So if you want to go and look and find out more about that, you can. Franklin Covey talks about the Big Rock, and Julie Morgenstern talks about the Do It Quick and Get It Done. And they're great trainers. And it would be unprofessional for me to not tell you that. And that often doesn't happen. Of course, it would be also unprofessional of me just to do a hack job on Julie Morgenstern or something like that. That happens too. But anyway, that's something you can look for. So I think those were 8 things I'll wish to check. Of course, it's an ideal situation when you can have fully customized, fully custom training. And if you can't get fully customized, where the consultant comes in, talks to you at length, helps you determine what is the need, what is the problem, and what are the possible solutions, and works with you and your employees, of course, that's ideal and wonderful, and gets feedback and oversees the application and the accountability structure. That's, of course, ideal. Of course, that does cost more. If you can even get customized, where the trainer does sit down with you and you can choose your topics and your time and your methods a little bit. And so, for instance, maybe she has a familiar topic. For instance, I do a lot of conflict reduction, and so I have a menu. We could at least pick out, you know, how much of what you want and time frame. So even if I didn't do the pre and the post, it's customized a little bit for you. Hear what you think are the issues. And I get a lot of that from the very best, most favored centers, the church-affiliated centers, usually with the mainline churches where the centers have been around quite a while and the parents are affluent. They, they typically have trainers in, and they have a training day at the beginning of school and in the middle of the school year, and they can hire someone to do, you know, this better training for them. And that's all wonderful. And some of the corporate centers then will have a variety of trainers in. They'll find their topic and they'll have them in for a staff meeting. And of course, that's, you know, still a one-off training. But many of the proprietor-owned centers could be doing that, but they are looking at what's cheapest and they'll let their employees go out to whatever. And I don't think they're getting good value. And many centers will just go to the conferences. And of course, conferences are wonderful and very encouraging, motivating sometimes for the staff, but they don't do a lot for your center's culture as such. So there's always the temptation to go for the cheapest, but I'm encouraging you to go for the best value. You know, I think you'll save time, you'll save grief, and in the long run, you'll save money if you get good training, because then you'll have staff doing what you want them to do. And you'll have great staff, a great center, and a better life and more budget. So I think you should spend your training dollars well. Get some vision, get a higher standard, and get the rainbows and butterflies and flowers. Yep. Okay. Now, so we have done the 3 that I promised. We did the biggest problem was the time. And we had this insight that some of the time is staff. And then we talked about we want to train the staff, but first we did get good employees. So part of getting good employees is get them started off on the right step. And so I want to mention to you that my binder is available, pre-service binder. So the first 8 hours that the employee has to have before they step in the classroom, according to minimum standards in Texas, and the topics that minimum standards lays out, they're all in on CDs in that binder, in order, with a few comments, particularly for the church-affiliated schools, but there are not so many comments that this wouldn't apply to everybody. It applies to everybody. But there are a few extra comments for the church-affiliated schools. And then there are a few exercises. There is a short test for every topic and multiple choice and then answers for you and certificate. I really think this is great value for you, because you can use this over and over again for any number of new hires. And because of what it is, you know what these people are being trained in. If you have to wait for whenever the agency puts out training and pay the, I believe it's $45, so you don't know when that person can come on, you don't know what they have been told, and you've had to wait. And you could get training in some other way. I've seen numerous instances where people have handed written material to people, and people have signed that they've read it, and they never read it. In fact, I saw one corporation were handing photocopies that were completely illegible, and many, many employees had signed, but nobody could have read that because it wasn't legible. So CDs, because people will really listen, and they're cheaper to produce than DVDs, and all of that material is right there for you, exactly like you want it, high content. I had directors say, well, we have a certain option by but it's too fluffy, and we need some high content. So I made that for the directors, and it's there for you, all in a binder. I even found pink. I found a pink binder. So I hope that continues, that I have a source for pink binders. But anyway, that's $197. I think you'll find it well spent. And if I have lots of call for it, I'll make some more of those early training. Okay, and so for today, all the information's free. The training certificate, though, because I'm going to make it for you and send it out to you, I'm going to charge you for that $5. Woohoo! Big spender. So send me a self-addressed stamped envelope to Sharon Sarles, Organizational Strategies, P.O. Box 971, Cedar Park, Texas 78630. P.O. Box 971, Cedar Park, Texas 78630. Tell me you want the 1 hour credit, or 1 hour credit for five big mistakes that directors make in training their staff. And I will send you a certificate complete with my registry number. And this training fulfill the core competency 1.2 operation administration and 3.4 personnel and management and 3.3 leadership and support. So you may wonder how I can give away content. Well, because there's a lot where that came from. And you can see what else I do at www.orgstrat.net, or you can call me for your next consultation. My number is 512-249-7629. Let's plan some training to change the culture of your center for the better. P.O. Box 971, Cedar Park, Texas 78630. On the internet, www.orgstrat.net. info@orgstrat.net. Thank you very much. Please do contact me right away. You can tell that I know what I'm talking about. I've been there. I feel your pain, and I have real transformative answers for you. My company, Organizational Strategies, has a proven track record of serving business owners, serving directors, serving all kinds of people doing education. I have great testimonials. I have more than I can put on my website, but do see some of those. It's here now. It's very easy. It's ridiculously inexpensive. It meets all licensing requirements. And your competition is getting it. So you want to, should buy it right now, because I know how busy you are. Your time schedule will fly away from you. So call me today, order your binder, and let's make some plans to help your center. Again, my phone number, P.O. Box. No, that's an address. P.O. Box 971, Cedar Park, Texas 78630. Phone number 512-249-7629. Or email me at info@orgstrat.net. Thank you very much. Okay, and checklist for the training hours. Tell me that you want 1 hour for five mistakes. If you do it today, it's only $3.99 and not the $5. Be sure to send me a self-addressed stamped envelope if you're doing snail mail, and be sure you email me if we're doing electronic. Thank you very much.